I'm Barbara Lane, Director of Arts and Ideas at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, our guests are Jonathan and Drew Scott of HGTV's Property Brothers. They're joined in conversation by Susan McTavish Best. And now, join Jordan Abel on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces Jonathan and Drew Scott and Susan McTavish Best.
So it's my pleasure to introduce Drew and Jonathan Scott, the faces of home renovation, according to the New York Times, and to legions of fans around the world. So how many of you are fans of Jonathan and Drew already? Wonderful. So as you know, they have taught millions of us, all about the ins and outs of real estate and renovation through their hit shows on HGTV, Property Brothers at Home, Buying and Selling, and Brother Versus Brother. And I'm sure all of you know, but just to recap, Drew is a seasoned real estate agent. He finds a rundown gem waiting for a rescue, and Jonathan, a licensed contractor, polishes that gem and transforms it before the owner's eyes. And they're here today to celebrate their first book, Dream Home, the Property Brothers' Ultimate Guide to Finding and Fixing Your Perfect House. The book is really incredible. They share secrets and tips and tricks to help us with our own renovations, and the book also offers a sneak peek into their whirlwind lives. Here to interview Jonathan and Drew for us is the incredible Susan McTavish Best, the phenom behind Living McTavish. Visit her site, and please join me in welcoming Jonathan, Drew, and Susan.
Thank you. Hello. Am I on? I want to check something. Let's hear it again. How many out there were single women just cheering for Jonathan? Thought so.
Ladies.
Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you so much for coming. This is
great.
Great
crowd.
I like it.
And thank you for hanging out with us, Susan.
It's good to be here. Congratulations on your first book. It's always nice to welcome fellow Canadians to San Francisco.
Yes.
Where are you from?
Canada is a state just north of Montana, and basically it...
But let's get back to your business when you were seven. Jam, I think, was the name.
Jam Enterprises.
Yeah.
What was it? And how did you start it?
Okay, so we were 7 years old. We turned seven, and you know, we grew up on a ranch, and you know, we had to know a day's work, day's hard work. We were always doing chores and everything around the ranch. But we turned 7 years old. My dad said, "Happy birthday, boys! Get a job," and which he actually did. And so I remember we went through. We were like, you know, we're going to start our own business, Dad. So we came across these craft hangers that you could make, where you would wrap nylon around the hanger and do a little rosette, kind of like what you'd see in your grandma's closet. And people were like, oh, isn't that cute, these little kids doing that. We would go door to door in our neighborhood, sell it to friends. We ended up hooking up with this woman who owned a chain of American paraphernalia stores in Japan, and she started buying them by the thousands. So we were sitting there, watching cartoons, and we're just
weaving
hangers.
Like,
all this jazz.
And we hired our friends on, our older brother, our mom would help us with the rosettes, and so we were go-getters. And then if you've watched any other interviews, we were clowns. That was one of our first jobs.
So it was fun, but it taught us, you know, how to have that work ethic, how to be overachievers. And so we've always been looking to do something different, and that's, we got into real estate coming out of high school. We just didn't want to be struggling actors. We wanted to just be go-getters, and that's how we started our real estate business.
So when you were in university and you started your company, I think you put $250 down?
Yeah, our first house. So we started researching real estate when we were 17, turning 18 in high school, and we got every late-night infomercial. We got every book, every VHS tape. For anybody who's under the age of 30, a VHS tape is like a really thick DVD. Yeah, anyway, we learned everything we could. We graduated, we moved over to Calgary, where we heard was a booming market, and this house we bought, it was a $200,000 house by the university, and at the time, the seller really was keen to sell. You could assume somebody's mortgage. You could take over their payments without qualifying. So what's better than two 18-year-old full-time students taking over your mortgage? Nothing could go wrong. Anyway, luckily we made the payments, and also he gave us a vendor financing. He did a second mortgage, the seller did, for us, and all that was left over was $250. And so after a year, we sold it for a $50,000 profit, paid off the original mortgage.
Went out to the clubs and made it rain.
Yeah. popping bottles. Yeah, and then it just grew from there. Originally, we got into it to pursue, you know, to be able to fund our own creative endeavors, acting, magic, everything we did. And
some of you maybe didn't know, I'm a magician. That's one of the reasons I moved to Vegas.
He is the third best. At one point, he was the third best magician, I think, in North America.
Yeah.
Who knew that this was a competitive sport?
Oh,
levitation.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, exactly.
Nerd Olympics of magic.
Also competitive bagpiper.
There might be one. If you've ever pulled the tail of a cat, that's the same thing.
Yeah. Anyone? We should be like 90 years old for all of the things we've done.
Yeah.
So tell us where your business is now. I know you have a production company.
Yes. Scott Brothers Entertainment is our production company. So we produce, a lot of people don't know this, we produce a couple of the shows that we're in, Brother vs. Brother, Property Brothers at Home. Who saw the reno of our place in Vegas? A bunch of you, yeah. So we produce those shows. Those are the two highest rated series that HGTV has ever aired by a long shot as well.
Which helped us discover that my dogs and my parents are more popular than we are.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I mean, we also produce shows with other talent. We develop talent shows as well outside the home space. So there's a big end, the back end of our companies and what we run. It's a big well-oiled machine. Even for Property Brothers alone, we do, let's see, Property Brothers Buying and Selling, Brother vs. Brother, we do 60 full-blown renovations a year for those shows. So we don't actually work with clients outside the shows anymore. We just don't have the time. We do our own investments, and then we do the show.
To put that in perspective, so the average host on HGTV does about 13 hours a year of programming. Some of their hosts do 26, and we do 60. Plus, we do the book. That's why it took 2 years to write the book. plus, we have our furniture line, Scott Living, and we have a lot of other things on the go. So we basically don't sleep.
When you're casting for these shows, what are you looking for, and how do you go about casting?
Oh, it's actually the network does the casting for Property Brothers and Buying and Selling, and their one requirement is people that will piss us off.
Yeah.
We kind of laugh, because you see it. If you watch the show, sometimes you're probably screaming at the screen, like, for the love of God, stop saying, I don't think you can do what you say, Jonathan. Yeah. We don't tell
have
them to do this.
Have you not seen the show?
But they know what we would need. We're looking for clients, different stories as well. If it's first-time home buyers, new family, empty nesters, all different stories.
And I can tell you that I have never wanted to punch one of my homeowners just once. I've wanted to punch them many times. So no. the good thing with us is we're very good at putting ourselves in the homeowner's shoes or in the home buyer's shoes, because it's a stressful process. A lot of these times, a lot of these clients, it's the very first time they've ever purchased a house. So we take all the emotion out of it for them. We show them really what they need to do. They still do a lot of rational things, like make last minute changes or add-ons that they can't afford. So that's frustrating, but you know, at the end of the day, we're helping these people get into a dream home that they would never have been able to do that on their own if it wasn't for the show. And that's very rewarding at the end.
So the shows are filmed in 140, I think, different countries.
Air, yes.
I would love to film in 140.
That's going to be my next question. So which, as far as where they're being aired, which is the most unlikely one? Andorra,
I was in Hungary. I went to Hungary. I was checking
at
the hotel.
Come on.
And when I was checking at the hotel, the guy starts speaking Hungarian to me, and he's blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, I apologize. I thought you spoke Hungarian because I watch your show. I'm dubbed in Hungarian. I'm like, yeah. Oh no, I'm not that good. But it's funny, if you go online, you can see all the different dialects, all the different languages. I tell you, I wish I had the voice of the guy who dubs us in Spanish because I would be so much sexier.
He sounds so. Yeah. He has this very low, sexy voice.
It's sexy.
But they use the same guy for both of us. So he just like talks nonstop when he's dubbing. And they did a commercial, which was hilarious. If you go on YouTube, you'll find it. We're called Hermanos Alobra. And what it was a shot from here to here, and it said, it was a picture of me with a white t-shirt on, like a fitted shirt, just turning like almost flexing like this. He's like, is your man strong? And then it was Jonathan, the same shot, holding a sledgehammer. Is your man handy?
Same voice.
It's the same voice. And it's in Spanish. And then the third one is me. It had me on a turning pedestal, and it had me holding a puppy. Is your man sensitive? Then it pops to a wide shot.
And he popped back saying, yes, I've got a chihuahua.
Exactly.
It pops to a wide shot, and they dubbed a super low voice on me as I come around holding the puppy, and I go, hola. you have to go on YouTube and see it. So their whole thing was, is your man handy? Is he strong? Is he handy? Is he sensitive? Well, we don't have just one of those. We have two. Hermanos Alobra.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Where, what country are you going to film in next that's not North America? Have you thought about maybe Scotland?
Well, we're UK citizens as well, so we actually have talked to Simon Cowell. Actually, approached us to do in the UK to film a show too. So
you should definitely do it. Yeah.
Yeah, one day. But for Property Brothers and Buying and Selling, we shoot around North America. We mainly shoot in the U.S. A lot of people think we only shoot in Canada. If it looks like a really expensive episode, that's Canada.
It's Toronto.
If it's inexpensive,
it's Toronto,
or Vancouver. And I know it's expensive. Property's expensive here, but most cities around the U.S. can't relate to the high pricing. But we've done Austin, Atlanta, Vegas, L.A., Connecticut. We've done New York. So we jump around. We go back to New York.
The challenge is it's expensive in Canada because to shave the ice blocks for the igloos basically
costs a lot.
You stack them,
your sled dogs, you know, racing with all the equipment. Yeah.
So, Scott Living, you have indoor and outdoor furniture. You have this new book that's coming out that would seem to position you well for marketing a variety of other products for inside the home. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Scott Living, because I'm not sure everyone knows.
Scott Living, we had a lot of our audience asking, because we raise the bar with everything that we're doing, whether it's the quality of what we're doing or the style. We want people to understand what they should expect out of their professionals. And it was the same thing when it came to the materials we're putting into the home. People said, why don't you guys have your own line? And so we don't just slap our name on anything. That's not something we want to do. So we actually designed all of these collections ourselves. We brought in experts who really understand textiles and fabrics and make sure that they're putting materials into these products that are going to last, because that's the big thing that we found from our homeowners, that a lot of people would buy stuff that falls apart, and you know, your first move, it falls apart. So,
well, more importantly than all that, there's one product we have in our Scott Living collection, which is Jonathan's favorite. Does anybody have the Jonathan gnome?
Yeah.
So we have our furniture and decor, but we just did it as a gimmick on QVC.com. We did these brothers gnomes, and it is hilarious. So their fans are going online, and we were telling them, use hashtag bro gnomes and put the gnomes in different positions. The funniest I've seen to date, there's a lady that had the bro gnomes. She was like to here on the sheets in her bed with the two gnomes next to her, and then she had some like, uh-oh, what just happened?
Did anyone, almost every live appearance, someone has brought the gnomes. Did anybody here bring the gnomes? Nobody here? All right. Almost every time somebody shows up. But somebody posted a picture as well with the gnomes at Victoria's Secret.
I was going to say, soon there's going to be a calendar of you guys with the gnomes, right?
I know. This
would anyone
want to
see? No one would want to see a contractor in a calendar. I mean,
in a plaid shirt with a gnome.
I'd be covered in sawdust or man glitter, as I call it.
Oh, but by the way, there's one thing the book doesn't have, Dream Home doesn't have, that our show has. We try our best to put it in there, but the reason our shows are number one, they're the top shows on the network, is because Jonathan does slow motion renovations in tight jeans. We just couldn't put that into a book. I don't know
But can you tell we don't take ourselves too seriously?
Yeah. Or arrogant, right? Okay, so you guys have gotten into music recently.
Yes.
Country music.
Who's heard our songs that we did?
Okay.
A few of you guys?
What was the first song you released?
Hold on. So Hold On was so we were doing Property Brothers at Home on the Ranch, which was, we went back to where we grew up and renovated a family friend's ranch. And it was very nostalgic being back there because we hadn't been there in years. And you know, being home with family and surrounded by family, we thought, why don't we write some songs? Because that's how we grew up. We were always around the campfire. My dad and Drew would play the guitar, and we'd all sing every weekend. So we were talking with a friend of ours who's a singer-songwriter in Nashville. She has written with everybody. She co-wrote The River with Garth Brooks, and she created Lady Antebellum. And I said to her, I'm like, what do you think of us writing a couple songs for the show? And she loved the idea, and we had no idea that Hold On Billboard charted. Like, it Billboard charted, went to number one on Vivo, and right now we're number nine on Great American Country's Countdown. So the song took off, but it's all about how we spend so much time on the road that the time you do get to spend back home with friends and family means that much more.
The two songs, Hold On and Let the Night Shine In, they're on iTunes, or if you want to see the music video for Hold On, just go on YouTube or Vivo, but it was fun. We just did it for
I know what you're getting at. You want a little live recital here. How about We'll give you a couple bars. How about that? Hold On's the one that the video's out right now.
Hold on, hold on. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. It's been too long, way too long. So I'm coming home to you.
That's
and
it.
Now go on.
That's
there.
All you get. Goodbye. So, I always laugh, though, whenever we see our fans. When somebody brings
up... I feel like
there
should be a bonfire here.
Yeah,
you
do
know?
It.
Not a single...
Who has the marshmallows?
Later went up in the air.
But someone will bring it up in an interview, and then if we're a live audience, there's always a laugh like, no, they haven't done that.
Yeah.
And then people go on and listen to it, and they're like, what don't these guys do? Overachievers?
I can tell you, I'm not very good at doing European clog dancing. No. I haven't taken that up
work
yet,
on that. Yeah.
That's the one thing I can't do.
He's good at it, though. I can
so your name is your brand, and your brand is your name. What other brands do you guys really admire?
Brands we admire? Mm-hmm. I mean, Elon Musk, everything that he does. Virgin, I think, is a great brand, too. I like these strong brands that are they're diversified into different markets.
I love so for me, like when I read, I love reading biographies. I love reading about the struggle that a lot of the most brilliant minds who've created the biggest empires, the struggles they had in the very beginning with doors being slammed in their faces, and which is a very local story as well. George Lucas, I thought, was a phenomenal story because people actually laughed him out of the room with his bizarre sci-fi ideas and all of these things happening. Of course, now most valuable brand in entertainment. So for me, those are the brands that I like. I love it when people. Anyone who follows me on social media, I write quotes every Monday, and I put quotes up every Monday. And one of my favorite quotes that I wrote is that nothing incredible was ever achieved by playing it safe. So I love it when people have these wild ideas that are going to revolutionize every industry that you know that we face.
So. Well, the big thing with us as well. I mean, growing up. Our parents were really encouraging us ever since we were little. They were just encouraging us to do whatever we wanted. We had so much energy. And my dad said to us when we were like 5 or 6 years old, never let somebody stand in the way of what you want to achieve. If someone tells you you can't do it, find 5 ways that you can do it. And that really has been what has driven us ever since we were kids.
So we are here in San Francisco and in Silicon Valley in the hotbed and cult of being an entrepreneur. What are 3 screw-ups that we should know about and we can learn from?
So we do talk about in the book as well, from what we've done.
Before you got into TV and what have you, you had a business for 10 years.
Yeah. Well, the big thing in the book, because we want you to learn from our mistakes as well and mistakes that some of our past clients have made, one thing we did is we were over-renovating. A lot of people don't think about it, but buyers in certain neighborhoods are only willing to pay so much for certain things. And so a prime example is a first-time home buyer community. We bought this house, and we did this big, beautiful renovation, put this expensive stone in for the countertops and top-of-the-line appliances. Then we realized after when we tried to sell that the buyers were not willing to pay for all these extras that we put in. They just wanted countertops. They just wanted your builder-grade appliances. It's a first-time builder community. First-time homeowner community.
And also just, when we're renovating on Property Builders, for example, I don't renovate on ego. And what I mean by that is you'll get some people, and this is a very, like in L.A., for example, a lot of the people, friends that I've talked to, their designers, their builders are like, oh, you have to use this Italian imported marble. It's 10 times the price, but it's Italian imported marble. First of all, no one would ever know it's Italian imported marble unless you told them you were dumb enough to pay 10 times the price for it. I can take all of these looks and I can emulate them with much more cost-effective materials that are going to last just as long, that are just as beautiful, but then you're putting the money towards something. Most of us are using our house as an investment, so we don't have millions of dollars to burn on things. So I think being cost-conscious when you're doing these things, it all comes down to education, understanding how your family is going to use the home, using products that are going to be beautiful but also durable enough to stand up to your lifestyle. So the second point I would say to add to the list there is not following the stigmas that some people have against certain products. Prime example, laminate flooring. People are like, oh, I hate laminate flooring. Well, there are types of laminate now that are impervious to water. The single board laminate products are indistinguishable from engineered hardwood. I even fooled Drew with a vinyl plank product. He went down, he felt it. He was positive it was engineered hardwood, but no, it was recycled rubber. It's vinyl planks, impervious to water. You're not going to scratch it.
Very
100 times stronger than hardwood.
Yeah, I really meant more screw-ups in your own business.
I think one of the prime examples of that is I don't dwell on things that you can't change. Yeah. I always say worrying is using a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it's not getting you anywhere.
Yeah.
So, when it comes to that, we learn from our mistakes. Any of the mistakes that we have made, we're very conscious as well about not overexposing ourselves. We try and always come up with new shows, new concepts for the audience and always make it a little bit different. You'll notice if you watched, we did Gingerbread special last year, which was on Food Network. We also have done we're doing a crossover show on Travel Channel and stuff as well. Just something to reach a new audience and expand the brand, but always deliver something different. So it's not so much that we have a lot of failures, no sense. We don't do a lot of these extra things because if it's not the right time for us or we're not 100% prepared, we're not willing to just do a half-assed job of it.
You're listening to Jonathan and Drew Scott of HGTV's Property Brothers. They're joined in conversation by Susan McTavish-Best on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
I mean, before we got into real estate and what we were doing, I was an actor. We were both acting. And one thing I thought was a bit of a regret to me is that I went for like 10 years without doing any acting. I'm like, I'm so far behind. I could have done so much more directing as well. Then I got into hosting. But now, when we look back, like Jonathan said, we don't regret anything. We learn from any mistakes.
Are you doing some acting right now?
I have done some. Yeah, I did a Hallmark Christmas movie last year. I played the jerk real estate investor. I thought it was a documentary.
Correction, though, that wasn't acting. Drew didn't realize the camera was rolling, so he just played the jerk realtor.
But our schedules are so busy that I don't get a lot of chance right now, so hopefully in the next year or two, as well our production company, we're going back to producing scripted as well.
We did a walk-on for Playing House on USA Network. It was a comedy.
That was a comedy show.
Where the woman dreamt of
a threesome with the Property Brothers.
Yeah. You guys have said that you get... about 500,000 messages on social media a week. Do you ever take any? Yeah, each. Just to be clear, do you ever take a little bit of time off? We're in the JCC, so like your digital Shabbat.
Well, yes. When we were filming in Atlanta, I was at the JCC every other day playing basketball.
Yeah.
So that's one of my pastimes. My downtime is sport related. My girlfriend and I, we try everything out there. So right now we've been doing parkour, trapezing, I'll do golf, basketball. But the big thing or that he makes fun of me for is I'll go and work a full day. Granted, Jonathan's in there doing like dirty renovations. A full day for me is in the office or a lot of calls and meetings. But I'll go and I'll do a volleyball. I'll do midnight volleyball for 3 hours. That's awesome.
Drew
for
does
me.
Consider being at the spa part of his day.
Yes.
It's a very long day.
It's tough.
Views on online dating.
So I did one online date in my life and it was so disastrous and it was like straight out of a Ben Stiller movie. It was so bad. It was so crazy. I've never touched again. I have friends who have found love online, but the problem is, and I'm an analytical person. I feel like this is a perfect idea because you can match up with somebody, you see all of their stuff, and you can see before you even meet them if this is a perfect match. And that would work if everybody didn't lie through their ass on what they put online. So, no, yeah. For me, not.
No?
Yeah. Do you guys have separate fridges?
Fridges?
Yeah.
Like a kosher kitchen?
What's in your fridge?
So, for those of you who don't know, in Vegas, we sold our individual places, and we bought one, we call it the Scott Family Compound, and we built a guest house for our
what's
parents.
What's in the fridge?
And so we did the renovation, all that jazz. Well, Drew's only home for 2 weeks of the year, so pretty much what I say gets to go and everything. So I have a gal who cooks our meals, healthy meals, and packages them for 3 days at a time, puts them in there. So most of the fridge are those packaged meals.
We are not junk food guys, but he does hate. I like protein shakes, and I'm a bit of a health food nut. And so he hates, every time I try and push my health shakes on him, he's like, no, thank you.
He'll be like, no, this one tastes good because you mixed it with peanut butter. It just tastes like crap mixed with peanut butter. They're so.
How do you know what? Never mind.
Yeah. So, it's I'd say stuff like that, and I'm a smoothie. I love smoothies. No, not dairy smoothies, but like real fruit smoothies. So I've got the smoothies in there and all that stuff.
Okay, yeah. People are curious about this kind of thing. So on with regards to the home stuff, your motto is finding homes with the best return on investment. So I've never bought a home in my life. I noticed a home the other day on Craigslist. It was $1. Is that a good return on my investment?
There's a good chance it might be a money pit. Who knows?
Or a scam.
Or a scam. There are a lot of scams out there, especially people trying to do for sale by owner.
Was it somebody selling it to you from Nigeria?
It was in Idaho. It was in Idaho. Yeah. It possibly needed to be moved brick by brick, you know.
Oh, yes. Mm. Well, the interesting thing is area has potential to make a bunch of money and lose a bunch of money. So people will look for a blanket solution to say, oh, is this going to be a good investment? Like, if I buy a foreclosure, it's going to be a good deal, right? No, we've had some clients who bought foreclosures and went way in the hole.
So how does one go about buying foreclosures? That was going to be another question of mine. How do you go about buying foreclosures? Is that always just a crappy deal and you shouldn't touch it?
No, it just depends. It all comes down to the numbers. The biggest thing is you have to work with somebody who understands, a real estate professional who understands the market in your area, and not even just your city. There are pockets within every city where the pricing is very different. And so with a foreclosure, you can get foreclosures on the MLS system. You can get foreclosures at auction. Some of the problems, you have to make sure that there aren't other problems that you have to pay for, because the foreclosure, you're taking it as is. Bank hasn't lived in it. They don't know anything about it. You may discover that there's some hidden structural problem that you're on the hook for.
I just find too many clients, kind of like along what Jonathan's saying there, too many clients get all excited about a foreclosure. A lot of people that go out there to buy foreclosures, and then they end up paying way more than the actual market value is. That's why I always tell people, have a real estate agent that understands foreclosure property and how to value those properties. Mm-hmm. Have them work with you, because then you'll know as it bids up and bids up and bids up, you won't end up paying more than what it's actually worth.
And those things as well, that there are sort of traveling auction things that go around where you can get in and buy auction houses and stuff like that. You have to be very, very careful, because a lot of those organizations, what they do is they create so much hype and excitement that people all of a sudden bid themselves up and they pay more than these houses are actually worth. So be aware of those flashy, like, come down, you know, make a million in real estate and, you know, be part of the auction. A lot of those, the people who are running the auction are the ones who are making all the money off of you, who they're unloading the properties to.
Mm-hmm. So no-nos for open houses.
No-nos for open houses. Don't have your kids there, don't have your pets there, and bring in a professional to stage it.
Okay, any awkward stories? Weird stories?
Yes.
Things that are going to make us cringe?
Oh, yeah, so I'll tell you one. I had a client. This wasn't for the show. This is before the shows, but we always stage. Whatever house we were selling, we always stage it, even if it was just cleaning it up with the client's furniture and whatnot, but we always wanted to look its best. This one client, they had a dog, and they would always bring it in and leave him in the sunroom for days at a time.
Ew.
Well, dogs do things when they're not let out. And I said to them, listen, I understand you bring your dog in, but please, 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 I'm having a realtor open. This was going to be 50 real estate agents that were going to come through and then tell everybody in the all their clients about the property. Please have it nice and clean. I gave them lots of notice. Well, they left the dog in there for 5 days. And
ew.
So I had even gone in.
They had many more problems than just trying to sell their home, right?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the real estate agents came through, and when you opened it up, the sun was beating through the glass from the top, and it was really, oh, it was terrible. And then, not only that, I go through, and his dad decided not to leave the house for the open house. He decided to sleep on top of his sheets in his tighty-whities like this, and he literally just laid there like that while all the real estate agents came through the bedroom and walked around to the other side of the...
But
yeah,
anyway,
don't do that.
What you have to realize with an open house as well, by the way, an open house is not likely to sell your house unless there's some feature inside that is so important people see that they wouldn't have seen from the listing. Generally, an open house is just a way for the real estate agent to get more buyers, more clients, and so.
So it's marketing more for the agent,
exactly,
for the home.
So it's, and that's what we said. Like, it's not that there's a bad thing, but just don't feel like your open house is a must-have, unless there's some feature you really need people to witness in person. Most of the people that come through the open houses are your creepy neighbors anyway.
And on top of that, too, I mean, one thing to keep in mind: it can be good sometimes if you have a lot of interest. Well, sometimes it's better than having people all through every hour of the day coming. They can all come at the open house, which is great. But if you have a buyer who wants to see your place and put an offer in, you don't want to make them wait until from Wednesday to the weekend to look through an open house. It's good to be able to have a professional there to show it and schedule it.
I would say of ours, we've maybe only sold maybe 5% of the homes that we've ever done open houses.
So it's purely marketing for the agent. Yeah. So with regards to making an offer, what are three mistakes that people make when making an offer?
The biggest mistake is an emotional offer. Mm-hmm. People get fixated. We see clients all the time. They see this kitchen that they love, a beautifully renovated kitchen, but they're ignoring the fact that there's a train that runs through the backyard, a nuclear power plant in the back, or that there's foundation issue. I mean, it's funny, but clients do it all the time. They will be like, I don't care. I will pay top dollar for this house, and the whole house is crumbling except for that kitchen that they like. So
another
don't be emotional.
Huge mistake that buyers do all the time is, I'm just going to lowball everything. Every offer, I'm going to lowball. It doesn't matter. That is a terrible strategy because, one, if you do really like the house, some selling agents, part of their strategy is they list the house low already to try and drum up a lot of offers. And if you come in too low, you'll offend the sellers, and they will not even take another offer from you or look at it. So you really, from a buyer's perspective, you need to do a market assessment. If you have a property that you've narrowed it down to that you're interested in putting an offer on, you and your real estate professional should be doing your own market comparison on that property. You should know exactly what that place is worth before you even put your offer in. I don't know how many real estate agents who work with friends of mine who said, oh, no, we just put in an offer because we put $5,000 less than what they were listing. I'm like, oh, but you did an assessment to see what the value is. No, we just put $5,000. Terrible idea. You should know the value of anything that you're putting an offer
on. Listed houses, the listing price has nothing to do with value. It can be $1 or $1 million, like you saw on Craigslist. What matters is what comparable homes are selling for in today's market. That's what gives you your market value.
In that neighborhood?
In that neighborhood, yeah.
With regards to renovation, what are the least expensive renovations one can make in their home for the maximum return?
Clean out the dog poop in the sunroom.
Obviously.
And actually, the funny thing is, cleaning is the easiest. When you watch Property Brothers and you see all those derelict homes that we're showing, we don't stage it like that. That people have put it on the market looking that awful. And if they just went in for $500 and had a cleaner go through, they'd probably get $5,000 more. So cleaning is key. But then paint is always nice and easy. If you make a mistake, you can paint over it again. It's all in how you prep and cover the floors so you don't damage anything.
Floors are a big thing, too. If you have rundown floors, that's one of the first things that buyers see. So having some nice flowing hardwood throughout. If you have kids, dogs, four husbands, whatever you have, that really do a lot of wear and tear to your floors, you want to make sure you have durable floors. So we mentioned the vinyl products or plank-style porcelain. That's a better opportunity to put that in, as it'll last longer than actual hardwood.
For
kitchens are great.
Yeah, if you're tired, I mean, and also keep in mind, too, it depends if it's a renovation for a place you're going to live in for a while or if you're just renovating to sell, because we never recommend doing a massive, crazy, big renovation when you're going to sell, because you never know if a new buyer maybe would want a different style of kitchen cabinet or a different type of flooring. So we try and look at things that are going to have big impact but don't cost a lot. One of the things we see in a lot of kitchens is they may be that old honey oak cabinet where the style is actually great and they're solid cabinets, but the color and the look isn't great. So you can resurface those if you paint them with an oil-based acrylic. Spraying is best, but you can even do it by hand. It'll make it look brand new, change out the hardware, and there's huge impact on a kitchen that you didn't have to tear out.
And something to know, too, in the book, in Dream Home, we've listed off so many simple things that you can do to transform your space without spending a lot of money if you want to just get that wow factor. And who's seen Buying and Selling, our show Buying and Selling? Buying and Selling is all about how to prep your house to sell for top dollar without spending too much money. You're doing a mild makeover, you're staging to sell. And so in there, we show you a lot of little things. The biggest note I will give you guys, though, don't do a spot renovation. Like you said, a lot of people love the kitchen. Don't just do a big reno on the kitchen and leave the rest of the place thinking that people will fall in love with the kitchen. Majority of buyers, they'll see a beautiful kitchen, but say the rest of the house is crap. So instead, do a mild makeover on the whole place. Spend a little less money, but in more areas, and that will get you more bang for your buck in the end.
The one downside to the shows that we do is that now the audience, like the viewing audience at home, they think they know everything, but, you know, so they'll go and they'll look at a house and they'll be like, well, I know I could put this now. They maybe don't know everything, but the benefit to that is now people are starting to be able to pick out crappy workmanship. So I think it's a good thing that we're raising the bar in our industry and educating the audience about what they should expect from professionals.
So when you buy your first place, Jonathan will come over and help.
That was going to be my next question, is how can you convince me to buy a place? Should I, or should I just stick with renting?
Move to Vegas where we live. Much more affordable houses to buy there.
Well, and you bring up a good point too, because we've always said that nobody should ever be so desperate to own a house that they're willing to put a down payment on a credit card, or they're willing to max themselves out.
Yeah.
Homeownership is not the be-all and end-all of everything. However, if somebody makes proper steps to get into homeownership, I think it's a phenomenal investment. And if you, even with the crashes and everything happening, if you look at the long term, real estate is always one of the most stable investments, and it's a great investment.
I feel like it's going to cost me more than $250 down, though.
It will. Yes. It will cost you more than that. But that's why, especially in markets like this, there's no problem renting or looking to save up till you can afford it. The last thing you should do is force yourself into a place you can't quite afford, and then month to month you're so strapped that you're not enjoying life. Yeah. You got to enjoy where you're
living. And that's even one of the other things that we point out in the book, too, is a lot of people. The whole point of our book is it's getting you to ask yourself the questions that you need to ask yourself if you're going to make a good investment. And this is the biggest investment most of us will ever make in our lives. One of the things you have to ask yourself is not just what your current income earning situation is, but what your future earning income situation is going to be, or your financial status. Because say, for like, for example, if you're going to have a baby and in six, or I don't know how long it takes to have a baby, whatever. So if you go from there and, you know, 9 months from now, your life
Why is he single?
Yeah. Your life's going to be a lot more expensive, right? So we've had clients who max themselves out now, not realizing that they can't meet their obligations in 9 months. So a lot of things you have to look at, a lot of things you have to balance. But it's so funny to me that people love to spend their money on quick fixes, like $40 Starbucks coffees every single morning, instead of investing in their retirement. And so a lot of people don't realize I used to be a financial advisor as well. And so one of the things that I would always say...
He is an overachiever.
Yeah. Right after university. I was in my early 20s. And so we... real estate, people always think, is some fancy secret formula to make it work, and it's not. It's the most basic principles in economics. Supply and demand. The more people that like your product, the better a price you're going to get. And so I always said to people, I'm like, think of it this way. If you, say you, for easy figuring, make $60,000 a year. You go out to the movies, you go out for to dinner with friends, you do all the things that you love to do, and at the end of the year, is there any money left? No. But then you get a raise, so now you're getting $65,000 a year. You go to the same movies, you go out with the same friends to the same restaurants and do all the same things you enjoy doing, and at the end of the year, is there $5,000 left over? No, because we naturally spend everything that's sitting around. So why not take that money and invest it directly into making slightly higher mortgage payments, doing
right
bi-weekly
away.
Mortgage yeah. payments?
Right away before you spend it somewhere else. Actually, I have one other question, then we'll come back. I know we're going to do questions with you guys, too. Show of hands. Who has a mortgage? Who here owns a house with a mortgage? Okay, keep those hands up if you pay monthly. All right? See, almost every hand stayed up. This is the kind of thing I implore you to go and talk to your lenders. It costs you nothing to switch over to biweekly payments or weekly payments. You know, in fact, you pay a little bit more by the end of the year, but you don't even notice it. And I have people that say to me all the time, I can't afford to do monthly or weekly or biweekly payments. You are literally paying the same amount, just in different in increments. If you go and do that, if you look at the over the lifetime of your mortgage, especially with the value of the properties out here, you're going to be saving yourself, you know, $100,000 in interest payments, something like that. If you can do a little bit extra every month as well, you could be saving yourselves a couple $100,000 in interest payments and pay your house off in 10 to 15 years or 10 years earlier.
So
talk to your lender.
One of the lectures that we do that talks about, you know, making every penny count, and most people think that the best way to have this great investment and pay off your home and add value and add it to the equity is to just do a renovation on a property. And that's half of it. If you're smart by adding value to your home by doing a renovation, raising the value of it, but then you're also smart on the financial side by doing biweekly payments and even increasing your payments by $50 a month here, maybe $100 a month as you get comfortable with it, you would pay that off in half the time and you'd have a property that's worth way more money. So, I mean, the numbers that we break it down show that you could own your house outright without making any sacrifices financially in like 14 years. How amazing would it be to own your house outright in 14 years? Mm-hmm. And that it works.
So I know we're going to ask questions from the audience, but is there anything that everyone here should know about your book?
Well, I would think the biggest thing is if you can't have us there to renovate your house, because we have a couple of projects on the go.
Sorry.
This is honestly the next best thing. We really wanted to give you this easy to read, easy to follow guide that can help you. It's a lot, like we said, a lot of stories from mistakes we've made in the past, other mistakes that we've seen with clients or other real estate investors, and it helps you. And even if you're doing a small project, even if you're just doing a furniture design makeover in your place, it helps you.
Even if it's a rental and you're looking to be inspired of ways that you can do things that, you know, will help spruce up the space without actually doing anything permanent, it's all in the book. Everything is in the book, and it's all there. Our philosophy is your home should make your life easier, and we're hoping that this book will make your home make your life a little easier.
And by the way, I would love to film Property Brothers here. I don't know if you guys would want to. I was saying
maybe you should do like Property Brothers rental. I don't know.
You know, I mean,
we talked about
there are
that,
different
actually.
Options. I think what you guys talk to everyone that you know, have them message HGTV through social media or go on HGTV.com and message them. The more people from a city or an area that tell the network to bring us there, the more likely they are to do it. I have family to live here too. I want to spend more time here.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
In the warm months.
So, are we going to do audience
questions?
Yeah.
Hi. When you guys do your Property Brothers renovations, how much of the budget is designated for like new furniture?
Right.
So
question.
Like it's like $120,000 renovation, which is like how much of it is furniture?
So on Property Brothers, all of the furniture that you see is included in the design and in the budget, and they get to keep it all when they move in. So, but keep in mind for Property Brothers, the budget and the timeline is only for those three or four rooms. That's not the entire house that we're renovating. We usually do renovate the whole house inside and out, but that's a separate timeline, separate budget for the people. But so Property Brothers, three to four rooms. It includes all of the furniture. Keep in mind the reason you could never renovate for the same price. One, you live in California. Two, I don't charge for my time, so they're not paying for the general contractor or the design. And anytime I get wholesale pricing on stuff, I pass that savings along to the homeowner. On buying and selling, we're just staging the houses to sell, so that's mostly rented furniture, so they don't keep any of that. And then on Brother versus Brother, we just finished season 4 in Las Vegas. The houses are incredible. There's $80,000 worth of brand new furniture and decor from Wayfair.com, and in each of the houses.
Where is it from?
Wayfair. Wayfair.com is. It's so like Scott Living, for example, we're going to have some of our furniture there. They have hundreds of different brands there, and. So the people who are off. So we honestly don't know right now who won Brother versus Brother because we're waiting for the houses to sell.
Oh, once I know who's going to win.
Yeah. Once the houses sell, we're giving preferential treatment to the offers that include all of the furniture. So, and then all the money from Brother versus Brother goes to charity.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's program features Jonathan and Drew Scott of HGTV's Property Brothers. They're joined in conversation by Susan McTavish Best. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
For those of us who have done home remodeling, your show is so appealing because it looks like it's so fast. How long do you actually work with a typical home buyer?
Yeah, that's a good question. So how, whatever...
44 minutes,
yes, exactly.
Done.
The shows, we don't lie. People think all the time that we're lying about our budgets and we're lying about our timelines. The timelines are real. The 5 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks that we do for Property Brothers renovation, that is real. But as Jonathan mentioned, you have to keep in mind, that's only 3 to 4 rooms. The rest of the house, we typically renovate the whole house. That's a separate budget, separate timeline. And Property Brothers, we shoot up to 10 episodes at one time because, if you think about it, the house hunting, the negotiation, the demo, the reno, this whole process takes a while. So we want to make sure we're giving you more than 2 episodes a year. No, so we want to. We definitely do 10 at a time. We'll go to a city for 3 to 6 months, and we'll shoot 30, 35 episodes.
Hi. You said you'd like to work here, but how do you handle... what do I want to say? The dealing with the red tape, the
what is it called? Yeah.
You mean like for licensing?
The permits.
Oh, permits.
Oh, permits. Yeah.
So, good question. So, the interesting thing is...
We take flowers to the city.
Yes. Well, actually, we do form very good relationships with the building development departments in every city. But the our show, the reason the building development departments love our show is because our show is not about, hey, DIY everything and cut corners. Our show is about understanding the value and when you have to bring in professionals and having things done right. And so, when we go into a city, I send a team about 3 months ahead of time to start finding contractors and trades that sort of raise the bar like we do and can actually handle doing 10 projects at a time. So we're about to start in New York and Connecticut. I've got 5 crews running full-time because I'll be doing, we're doing, 16 projects while we're there in 3 months. And so what's interesting is when I leave a city, I need to make sure that there's still a warranty on all that work after I leave so our homeowners aren't left in the dark. So I always work with a general contractor in every city who knows all the local amendments to the code, has all of the sub-trades lined up, and they are the GC of record who will remain there for the warranty after I leave. So it's a great way. When we come into a city and we work, we create about 100 to 150 jobs in every city that we go to.
Yeah. So. And by the way, anybody who's wondering if I'm licensed in every single city that we go to, no. We work with local real estate agents off camera as well. I don't take a commission for working with the clients. A lot of them are already working with agents.
I always laugh because their agents will come over to us and they'll be like, so can I at least get a referral fee? I've been working with them for a year.
Yeah.
I don't Drew doesn't steal them away. No.
But the reason I don't, one, I would be doing, if I was licensed in every city that we go to, I would be doing recurrent training and the relicensing nonstop year round. So that would definitely not work.
And one other thing I was going to say about the permits you were asking. So when we find the house and we get the offer, we actually get all the permits and everything done before they even take possession. So everything's lined up and ready to go, which you would never want to do on your own because if for some reason the transaction didn't close, you would have wasted all that time. But we do everything in advance so that it's a well-oiled machine as we move forward. So prime example of why we haven't filmed here yet. we did film. We filmed 2 seasons of Brother vs. Brother in Los Angeles, and we were able to expedite in Los Angeles, which is kind of crazy as well. So I think that we would have a pretty good opportunity to be here. One of the biggest things going for this spot in all of California is we live in Vegas, and I would love to film somewhere where I can be home in like a half-hour flight if I wanted to, whereas most of the places we film are like 4.5 to 5.5 hours away from home. So that's why Drew only goes home for 2 weeks a year. So we've been telling them that we would love to film anywhere around here, because they won't film Property Brothers in Vegas because everything looks the same. It's all desert landscape. All that architecture is the same. But here, when we're driving around, I mean, every community I'm going to, it's very cool. The architecture is very different.
I'm always surprised that when you're in Property Brothers, the first house that you show people, they always seem shocked that it's out of their price range.
There's a lot of idiots out there.
Right. Yeah. And always,
Jonathan likes to think that I have a hairless cat that I pet, and I take people to this dream home. So you love it? All, you can't afford it.
I hate that part of the show. Yeah. I think it's the meanest, worst thing. Now, granted, now we're not pulling the wool over anyone's eyes anymore because most people have seen the show, so they're figuring it out as they go. But the funny thing is, when
did
production,
they dramatize it a little bit?
Well,
like,
we try not to. Production actually sets up the homeowners, which sounds kind of evil, but they set up the homeowner and be like, "Oh, well, we managed to find this home. It's amazing." And they're like, "Wow!" So when they come in and Drew's doing the tour, they're like, and even if they've been looking in a community for like a year and found nothing, Drew somehow found the home.
I'm that good. So now it's more. This is what you're asking for, because everyone asks for this, but they can only afford this. So now it's literally just showing, this is what you're asking for, now let's be realistic and go out there and find what you can afford.
I'm getting you a hairless cat.
Yes,
so you
thank
can...
you.
Next question on your left.
Hi, I'm curious, what's the cool 3D software that you guys use in your show? Yeah,
so we use 3D Studio Max. It's not actually a real estate software. It's what's used to do like, you know, FX in the movies and whatnot, or those big commercial fly-throughs of corporate building stuff. It cost me about $10,000 per episode to do that. So it's not something that anyone would ever normally use.
Don't ask your contractor to use that.
Oh, yeah.
Place.
They hate it when you say that. But in reality, you don't need it, because I also do inspiration boards for every family, and that's for all of my clients outside of the shows as well. That I used to do, you would do up an inspiration board showing them what you're going to put into each space and, you know, textures, materials, color palette, you name it. But you don't need to have a 3D rendering. I just do that because it gives you a real visual for the audience to see.
Honestly,
what's in my head.
Use Pinterest. Pinterest is great. You can build a board and you can put in all the inspirational things that you like, designs, patterns, colors, and it'll really help.
Hi there. We're big fans of HGTV shows all across the board.
No, and you will only like ours.
Well, okay. So, but there are a few that are a lot more conservative that take place in, say, Texas that, you know, it seems to be the people that watch these kinds of shows.
There is nothing conservative about Chip Gaines.
I can't get enough of his belly, honestly.
I've seen that man take his shirt off more times than I can. So.
What's Sarah's question?
So the question is, I have noticed that you have had, same-sex couples on your show, and there seems to be more of a more progressive side of your show. And I'm wondering if you've gotten any like pushback from HGTV or your viewers or anything.
No,
like
so
that?
That is a great question, because for us, the way we are not out here to judge anybody and how they decide they want to live their lives. We are not here to say we want to showcase your property and we want to help you, but we don't want to help you. So for us, and HGTV is the same way, we are here to help people. And so we love to showcase different stories. We do empty nesters, first-time home buyers, and everybody.
Drew will take a commission from anybody equally.
Yeah. Totally, yeah. Cool. So yeah, no, and HGTV I love, because we'll bring to them ideas that we want for stories and some of the shows. We produce shows that we're not in as well. And HGTV is an amazing partner for us. We're one big family. And all the other talent, too, on the network as well. Everyone thinks we all hang out and have pajama parties together. We do.
Yeah.
No.
But the one dark side, I am biased and told the network to no longer put creepy cougars who try and hit on me throughout the whole episode.
There is that.
So,
but I keep sneaking them in.
Yeah.
It's entertaining for me.
Hey, hi, guys. I was wondering if you could help me find a contractor in San Francisco that isn't going to disappear. Like on your show, they show up.
Yeah.
You usually call them, and then they say, I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe next week they show up.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
So you are dealing with California syndrome or New York syndrome, any of the big, big, busy markets, we found that you'll even get good trades, reliable trades that take on too many jobs and then they can't service anybody. So it's a challenge. And the unfortunate thing is there's not a heck of a lot more you can do than in the very beginning making sure you're working with somebody who's going to stand by their word and what they're going to do. Everything should be in writing. In fact, this is in the book when you're reading there. There's a whole list of the things that you should expect. If you find a contractor, and I'll be honest, a lot of the times I'll find these really great, young, enthusiastic construction companies who they want to make a great impression and they're going to stand behind their product and they're willing to put in the extra effort to get there on time, whereas sometimes it's contractors who've been around for a while and they've decided to take on too many jobs and then they start, you know, getting lazy and not, you know, fulfilling their obligations. So I say find someone who has that energy, that, you know, hungry energy to get it done. They've set themselves up like a career. They've got a great website, affiliated with the Better Business Bureau, maybe a home builders association. Anyone who changes their cell number every 2 weeks or, you know, you get that red flag.
How long have you had your cell phone number for?
I've had my cell phone number now for 17 years.
We did change it. I'll tell you why. Way back in the beginning when we started our company, you know when you go to the movies, they have commercials before the movie? Well, we decided to do that. We spent a fair bit of money prepping it, and it was a big picture. Jonathan over-photoshopped our faces. It was just an image of us. For some reason, we decided we both would wear the exact same outfit, so we literally had the same shirt.
Winning.
Weird.
Well, yes, it was our Scott Real Estate ad, and Jonathan decided the business cell phone number, he would put it on there, and we didn't make one sale off of all of the market. In the entire city, all the movie theaters had this still image of us before the movies. All we would get were teenagers prank calling us nonstop.
Well, I want to buy some real estate.
Yeah.
But I will actually tell you, that is actually still my same cell number. I still have that same number. So.
Oh, dear.
Yep,
there you go.
I do.
So, and the other thing, too, I missed if Jonathan said this. A lot of contractors will ask you, let's just get in there and do the work. Don't worry about a contract right now. We'll just get going. I also need $50,000 up front to get started. Contractors are not allowed to ask for money up front. Did you tell them, sorry?
No.
They're not allowed to ask for money up front unless
they're
bonded.
Is it state by state?
It's state by state. So, again, you have to check out and make sure. But generally, in almost every single state, they have to be bonded or they have to be affiliated with a home builders association if they're going to ask for money up front. Otherwise, they're not allowed to.
And always get it in writing. Get anything they're doing in writing.
Quotes and contracts.
I'm going to do one question at the front here, and then we'll come back to you guys. Yeah. I'll reiterate the question. You're fine. So the question is, Jonathan, last week's episode, a ceiling fell on your head. Awesome.
So who saw the episode where the ceiling fell on me? That was actually from a little while ago, but it was like this giant living room. So I'm a safety freak. You know, so with that one there, I will give you a little insider tip. When we were touring through, I noticed that there was something wrong with the support across there. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And so I cleared everybody out. And I went up and I inspected, and I saw this whole thing was about to collapse. The entire room was going to collapse. So,
like the drywall was going to come down.
Yeah, what they had done is they had several layers of drywall in this 400-square-foot living room. And so I set up, like, 13 cameras and every possible scenario you could think of.
In case something fell.
But I didn't tell the homeowners. And so we cleared out, I checked it all out, and we get them back in there. I'm like, oh, okay, hold on, guys. Step back one second. All of a sudden, it looked like I was killed. And great footage and all that jazz. But I'm very good. I've only been injured a couple of times, and one of them was the dumbest thing. It was season one or two. And we're black belts in karate, for those of you who, of course, we're black belts in karate. So I was doing a demo with a family, and the kids were there. I'm like, well, you guys know I'm a black belt, right? I don't use a sledgehammer. I use karate. And then I do that. I didn't realize they were solid spruce shelves. I thought they were MDF. So I tore my shoulder when I did it. And then I'm like, yeah.
He didn't want to show the kids. He's like, he chops. He's like, ugh, see that, kids? That's amazing.
That was one of them. And then the only other real bad one, and then there's humor in everything. So I was doing lath and plaster, for anyone who doesn't know what lath and plaster is, it's old-timey drywall. So basically it's little slats of wood, and they put plaster all over it. Well, the little slats of wood have these tiny nails that'll get you when you're doing demo. So I was talking to the homeowner. I'm like, blah, 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 you know, we're doing a good job here. And this little tiny piece of lath fell out of the ceiling and hit me right at an artery. And so I was like, oh, and I grabbed it, and I'm talking to him, and the cameraman's like, Chuck, move your hand. I go like this, and it starts spraying the camera.
At the camera lens.
Bubbling out of my arm.
No, even worse than this. So that happened to him. And he had actually, because he'd been working long hours.
At the flu and everything.
Yeah, he had actually passed out from it. Like it was bad. No,
so I went out front. I'm like, all right, I'll finish. I'm going to step out front. And I go out front. And I had the fever, flu, and everything like that. And I'm like, I'm just going to sit down for a out cold.
So the producer calls me. I'm on another episode. I'm doing a house tour with some buying and selling clients. And they call me, and the producer says, Drew, I'm sorry to tell you this, but a beam fell on your brother, and he's had to go to the hospital. And I was like,
beam.
What?
Like
a beam?
Big.
And anyway, it turns out it wasn't a beam. It was a piece of wood this big that just happened to have a little nail in it. Yeah. And so I said to that producer, who, by the way, has been producing home television for like 15 years, I'm like, by now, you should know the difference between a beam and a piece of wood. Anyway,
so otherwise, we're safe, pretty guys. Safe.
Yeah. Here, I guess we have time for two more questions.
Two more,
here.
Yeah.
I was wondering, what is the lowest cap rate you're willing to accept for a personal investment property? And also, what other financial measures do you think are important when evaluating a project?
Okay, so for cap rate, basically, if you cook me a home-cooked meal, I'll come over and renovate your investment property. So that's my return. When we were doing our investments back in the day, we had pretty conservative returns that we were looking for if we wanted to make it worthwhile. But you look in Vegas, for example, you have to think about it. Every market, this is a very complex question. For those of you who don't know what the cap rate is, it's basically the return that you want. If I'm going to invest $100,000 on this, how much am I going to make back annually on that initial investment? So we always made everything very conservative. But everyone was always so concerned, like, well, with the volatility in the market, if the prices go down or people are losing their homes because the market crashed, what's going to happen? If you think about it, you can make money in real estate no matter what happens in the market, because what happens when the market crashes, people unfortunately lose their homes, they lose their ability to qualify because they have no credit, they have to rent. So what we did is we held onto a lot of the properties. Instead of bailing out on houses and losing our money, we held onto a lot of properties as rentals because the rental market was not actually affected as badly. So a lot of ours, we were making a return of about 21% on our cap, our initial investments into it. But normally, I would say more conservatively, people are looking for something closer to around 10.
Yeah, you definitely have to know your local market, know what types of investment you want to get into for real estate, whether it is rental, ownership, flipping, whatever it might be. I mean, it's just tough in a market like this where there are a lot of people out there willing to jump in, investors willing to jump in. Flipping and getting a good price on a property might be tough.
The people who lose the most money, by the way, whenever anything happens in the market, is always the people who panic. The people who panic and they bail, or the people who get greedy and try and take on too much. So a lot of people
over-leverage,
they took on too many properties and all of that. And then as soon as there's any fluctuation in the market, all of a sudden, they have big
Let's
problems.
Let's do a final question
Last
over here.
Question?
Oh, we Hello. Forgot.
This is my daughter, Grace, and you any of your shows is her favorite show.
Thank well, she has you. Great taste.
Do you have a question?
Grace, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you Team Drew or Team Jonathan?
We don't have to make him feel bad by answering that.
Yeah, that's it. You know what I will say, though? What I do love is when we'll be out in an event or we'll be walking down the street and we'll have, a 5 or 6-year-old kid come up to and be like, Drew, Jonathan, I love your show. And it's not just the parents making them walk over. They actually, you can tell, they well, want the, to show
you have
the show.
You fans of all ages. It
oh,
seems.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. The fact that an entire family can watch our show, be inspired, laugh, have a good time. We take the job seriously, but not ourselves. So I do want to say a thank you to all of you guys for watching our shows and continuing to watch our shows. And I hope you get the same enjoyment out of our book, Dream Home, that you do out of our show.
And I appreciate you guys coming and spending a little time with us. If you want to ask other questions, go on social media. We answer handfuls of fan questions every single day. I'm Mr. Silver Scott on every platform. Silver's my middle name. And he's Mr. Drew Scott. So
thank you so much.
Thank you so
Great.
Much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and 91.7 KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guests were Jonathan and Drew Scott of HGTV's Property Brothers. They were joined in conversation by Susan McTavish Best. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Brandon Battaglia, Ben Bernardi, Maya Finley, and Alex Espelay. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Barbara Lane. Thanks for listening.